Climb ladder. Choose your own adventure.
Mahalo, welcome to the Slime Wire podcast. This is episode 2839, baby. I am your host.
Mahalo.
I am your host, Triton T2, and I'm broadcasting out of Portland, Oregon. I am talking to my wonderful co-host. Would you like to introduce yourself, sir?
Yes, I am the one and only co-host of the show, EK Men Sensei, coming at you live from Miki, Hyogo, Japan.
What's the name there?
So the name is Miki. Miki. It's means three trees in Japanese. We're known for knives around here. We make a lot of nice knives.
Okay. Well, yeah. I think to start off, what we should talk about is sort of like what we were discussing last night about how we've got a newfound exuberance and appreciation for what we're doing here. And we do want to make this show special and important because deep down we know that it is an important and special show.
Oh, yeah. It's the best show on the internet. It's the only show on the internet, really. I don't know. What did you want to talk about regarding that? This is coming out of left field for me.
Oh, well, I mean, just the fact that, like, you know, this is like an incredible esoteric show. And we are, yes, we are truly like brilliant minds. We are some of the greatest thinkers of our generation.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even if it is destiny for this show to be passed over in relative obscurity, I think people will be posthumously digging it up after we die, and there'll be a collective realization that this, we were really the key to understanding the mid 2010s internet culture, moving on through to the 2020s internet culture. So yeah, I mean, whoever's lucky enough to be listening to this right now, you're making history. You're getting in on the ground floor or something, so you should be proud of yourself.
Yeah, and so we're making a few changes to the format of the show. Yes. We're sort of going back to basics. We're going to be talking about politics more. And I'm recording outside so that I can chain smoke for the entirety of the show, which is really harkens back to the first few episodes that we did where I was chain smoking, but it was inside because it was an apartment that I really did not give a shit about. But I unfortunately do care about my apartment now, but to work around that, I've set it up so I can record outside. I'm right next to a busy highway. Hopefully you can hear some ambient sounds. It would be nice if it was raining right now, but it unfortunately is not.
Yeah, not raining over here either. So sorry to disappoint our fans there, but I think I did hear the whoosh of a passing truck or something just now. So
You're gonna hear many of them. This is all about the vibes. And you know what else were we talking about the true genius nature of our show was about uniting like lowbrow sensibilities with high concept art and discussion.
I think that there's been a recent trend in academia and in the broader world that like people are interested in low art, you know, dissecting and analyzing low art. But the people that are interested in it are highbrow people. They're Ivy League humanities graduates that are
losers.
They're dicks. And so they're coming up from their little perch, their ivory tower perch, and they're looking down at things like, you know, Paul Blart Mall Cop and like Monsters University or whatever, and saying, oh, wow, you know, there's like cultural value in this, and you can learn something from analyzing these traditionally lowbrow works of art. We take it and we took a little bit of a spin on it, right? Because we're very lowbrow boys. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, we have the sensibilities of freaks and creeps and losers.
Yeah, we're the scum of the earth, but we set our sights on the highest possible art. We take the high road when it comes to art. And even if we are talking about things like cloud rap and SoundCloud rap, vaporwave, which I think those would traditionally be considered low art, I think what we're trying to say is that no, it's actually the the most experimental, the most high concept art around. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. And the other thing that I would like to point out is, you know, I believe we started this as a leftist podcast.
Yes.
I believe throughout the show, our political takes have gotten more and more out of left field. And it's impossible to pin us down on any sort of political compass at this point. But I'm a follower of like post-left internet irony. And a lot of those guys, what they're doing is they are really doubling down on the idea of becoming great thinkers and doing lots of homework and, you know, pretending like you're in debate class. And I think that shit is incredibly lame. I think that's the worst shit you could possibly do. And so I love that we are we are engaging in these lofty ideas, but through a place of just appreciating and talking about art, you know?
Yeah. I mean, the great Irish novelist Samuel Beckett once advised one of his admirers to avoid reading and culture. He said, avoid reading and culture. These are traps. And I agree with him. And his point was, you shouldn't waste your time trying to read the classics or whatever, trying to understand your cultural heritage, your big ideas from the past. You should just dive right into it. And that guy went on to create some of the best stuff of the 20th century. So I think that we should take his advice and we should just go for it, you know?
Yeah, and I think a lot of this like focusing on like politics and such leads to some really bad takes. I know this is, I didn't prepare you for this, but I just thought of it now. I wanted to hit you with a take that I've heard recently, okay?
Okay,
I've heard a lot of people talk to me, or I've read a lot of people on the internet very angry about the huge lockdowns going on in Australia or Austria or places in Europe, and about how inhumane that is, and about, you know, what a terrible thing that is for human rights. And my thing here is that I think that's insane and ridiculous to care about when there are other countries in the world where people are being like genocided, or, you know, where there's places like Afghanistan where like your idea of liberal versus Republican like political bullshit does not apply at all.
Hold up in any way. Sure.
And so the idea I have is that anybody that would like have an honest opinion about that is just, they're just fools. They're fooling themselves into thinking that that sort of political discourse means anything at all.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think that if you want to be a political guy and you want to care about politics, you have to veil your true purpose, which is self-aggrandizement and appearing smart to your friends and family and to people out around the world. And you have to veil that under the guise of caring about people, right? But if you're going to care, I mean, you know, if you're going to say that what you're doing is for the benefit of somebody, then, you know, the optimal beneficial thing that you could do would just be to like give your money to a charity that helps people in the third world. I mean, that would be the most effective way to alleviate suffering. You know what I mean?
Oh, so, yeah, of course.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't really, I'm not going to change any of my political beliefs on this show or in real life at all.
Well, I mean, you will over the course of the show, because throughout us talking, we seem to figure things out.
Yes. Well, I don't know. I looking back on some of my takes, like claiming that I wasn't a patriot, I really regret saying that on the podcast, you know?
Well, I took you to task for it.
Yeah. You took me down on it. And I really do regret saying that. I feel now more than ever, having been cast asunder from my home country for all these many years, more patriotic than ever.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
speaking of things that like we that aren't on the docket, but like I would like to touch on just briefly, even if I don't have any like really important takes on them. Have you heard anything about the Rittenhouse trial? We should have had this on the docket.
Yeah, we definitely should have put that up. Yeah, I just know that he was acquitted because it was found that he was acting in self-defense. Is that what happened?
He hasn't been acquitted yet, but basically the prosecution took like a big nosedive and they sort of fucked themselves. And then he gave like a testimony where he like broke out in tears and stuff. And
I saw that
basically
picture.
with all the evidence that has been presented has been like he actually was acting and he wasn't. He's not guilty of the charges that have been enacted that have been brought on him, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
That does not mean he's not a horrible piece of shit. It doesn't mean he isn't a loser, MAGA, LARPer, douchebag.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
But, yeah, so that's a very interesting thing. And, like, what I've heard recently is that a lot of, it's being called a watershed moment where a lot of liberals are watching the trial because they have nothing to do because, you know, most of these people are still, well, they're not stuck inside, but these are mostly the people that continue to choose to be stuck inside. Watching the trial and realizing that, like, a lot of the media, how the media portrayed this event is not how it actually happened.
Yes, yes.
So
I think
there is a lot of, a lot of pontification about how this is going to be a big watershed moment for a lot of young people that are going to become Republicans in the very near future.
I see. Yeah. I do kind of think that ties into the larger, political hangover that I think a lot of people in our age demographic are having after the year of just relentless rioting. And myself included, at the time, I totally supported rioting and I thought it was cool. And now I'm kind of like, I don't know. Maybe it wasn't that great. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, I still think it's cool, but I mean, maybe.
Yeah, it is cool.
But I don't think it really changed or affected anything.
Yeah, it totally didn't change or affect anything. And at the time, I supported it because I thought it would change or affect anything. I think that in retrospect, that was just silly of me. But getting back to the Kyle Rittenhouse thing, I think that it's like, it just kind of speaks to the sort of inanity of like millennial left guys that totally supported revolutionary violence or whatever in 2020, and basically the entire goal was to provoke a response from the right, or you know, they were claiming that they were fighting fascists and stuff. And so they should have, I mean, like Kyle Rittenhouse, like, sure, he was a 4chan guy who, was.
I don't just even think he was a 4chan guy. I think he was just like a Facebook meme guy.
Yeah, he was an internet guy who decided to take his ideology out onto the streets. But it's like, you know, people are so, have this mock moral castigation of him, but really, like, what do you expect was going to happen? Like, the whole point of those riots, I mean, the people that were like to the left of Black Lives Matter protesters that were going out there and trying to turn the protests into a larger insurrectionary movement or whatever, their whole goal was to be like fighting fascists and fighting right-wing douchebags like that. And like, that was like the whole point of the riots, right? So there was, I mean, for them, for anarchist Antifa douchebags, that was the point of the riots, was to provoke a response from the right wing. And so then it happened, and now he's being castigated. Like, you can't blame him for going into a situation where it was basically lawlessness and then, you know, doing something crazy and lawless, you know? I don't know.
Especially as a child, you know?
Yeah, yeah, as a 17-year-old kid or whatever it was. What did he actually do? I don't know. Like, I remember when it actually happened. He had like an AK and he shot some people.
So he, he like went into the city, Kenosha, where they were rioting. He was driven. So this is a thing that like all of the media said that he was driven across state lines, which was not true, apparently. Yeah. So he went to this city he lived on, like, the outskirts of, and, yeah, he tried to, like, I don't know what the fuck he was trying to do, but a crowd ended up, like, following him, and he felt that he was in danger, and he ended up shooting somebody, and then another guy who had a gun and was pointing it at him, like, he ended up shooting that guy. So he murdered, he killed two people and wounded another.
Yeah. So now, but now that the details of the trial are coming out, I think, people are realizing that he was smeared basically by the media at the time.
Yeah. And like a lot of stuff that I've read is that people didn't even realize that his victims were white. Like they thought he murdered two black people, but he in fact murdered two white Antifa protesters, you know? And that's horrible. You shouldn't murder people. You should not kill people. And you shouldn't go to protests with an AR to try and, I don't know what he was trying to do. But especially as a child, like, oh my God. But basically what's happening is that like it appeared to be a very shut and closed case. And there's a lot of new information that has come out that points to that not being the case.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I would be happy if people, young leftist millennials, kind of like took a chill pill for a little bit, you know?
Yeah, it'd be nice.
Yeah. And I have to say, like I feel like this, like that same thing where like people are realizing the kind of like excesses of what happened last year. That's basically happening to me too. You know, like I have to take an L. I gotta dig deep, examine my political beliefs. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I get that. I get that a lot. Yeah, I understand that.
Yeah, so I hope Kyle Rittenhouse is doing good.
No, I mean, he's a loser. I don't
more
like
power
him.
To him. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is just like fucking like all of these like. And this is something that I've thought for most of the time that this buffoonery has been going on is like all the people that are on in the alt-right or are whatever right-wing young guys. It's like, I know so many people that are just like them in my hometown, you know? Literally, I'm childhood friends with people like that.
Oh, yeah.
And they're just, they're just like kind of losers, you know? That's just what it is.
Did you ever read the lawyers? This isn't about Kyle Rittenhouse. It's about the people that stormed the Capitol on January
6th. Oh, yeah, yeah.
And where he called them short bus people.
Yeah,
I believe his quote was that like these aren't the smartest people, but they're our brothers and our coworkers and like they're our fellow Americans, and they've had to sit through 4 years of propaganda the world hasn't seen since Hitler. And
for sure. Yeah, no, I think he also said something about how like half of the people that he's representing are on the spectrum. So, like his basic defense is just that they're all idiots. They're all morons.
not a bad defense.
They're all autists. And it's like, that's fucking totally true. That's undeniably true. Like all of those guys are just people that haven't found a place in an economy that doesn't have like the jobs to support them, you know, that's shrinking and shrinking. And the only people that can afford a life where they get to pretend like they're normal people are, you know, Silicon Valley dudes, advertising people, and that kind of shit. So,
yeah. And we know people like that too, and they're also dumb as shit.
Yeah, yeah. They do not deserve their position any more than, like, their IQs are not higher than those guys that are QAnon conspiracy dudes.
Yeah, like, that are being radicalized by Facebook memes.
Yeah, they're literally the same people. Like, the people, no, they're not the same people, but they are, they have the same level of intelligence. And, like, yeah, there's people that have high-paying, high-salaried tech jobs that, you know, fucking, like, believe in astrology. So I don't really see, like, there's no difference there to me.
Savage.
Yeah, so that's good. I don't know. I'm definitely, I'm at a point in my political life where I feel like I just really don't know what the fuck's going on. I'm not even trying to keep up with stuff anymore, especially stuff that relates to like far left versus far right American political culture. I just don't know what to think anymore.
Well, I think a big thing that, I don't know, I mean, this probably has happened throughout all of history, but I mean, it's just like, you know, like, if you are victim to choosing a side, you have been, what happened is that you were, like, the media took your brain and destroyed it, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
You were captivated by some, like, whether it's Fox News, whether it's Tucker Carlson, or whether it's Stephen Colbert, you were manipulated in some way.
Yeah. I think that part of that is, like, the effect of the way that ideologies that on both sides get a hold of
you. And I'd like to point out that it's not just those two guys. Like, it's not like it bleeds into, like, the Twitter sphere. It bleeds into, like, esoteric dudes on Twitter and YouTube. Like, it's not just them. Like, there's weirdos on YouTube that you think that you're, like, one of the only 50 people that watch this guy, and he really knows what he's talking about, but you're still being manipulated.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I think also that the extremism that's happening right now is a result of a media system that needs to continue to exist and be profitable. Who've basically taken, like, there is a mechanism that the entire media, like, ecosystem thrives on, which is getting people to debate a conclusion of without actually examining the premises that they're set on, you know? So, when the Kyle Rittenhouse thing first started, people on the left wing were like, oh, this guy's a total murderer, fascist, blah, blah, blah. And people on the right wing were like, oh, he's, you know, just a freedom fighter who's defending his right to bear arms or whatever, and he was acting in self-defense. But neither of them actually knew anything about, like, the case, you know? Like, the premises that both sides started out on were basically totally unknown, and they just came to these conclusions, right? I think that at this point, it's, like, getting kind of irresponsible for people in the media to keep on, like, running these completely speculative news stories. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Dude.
All right. Well, do you want to move on to the docket?
Let's go to the docket. What's on the docket for today, baby?
Well, we have to talk about the Astro World, and I love saying this phrase, mass casualty events. I don't like saying that phrase because it does mean that a lot of people died, but it is a very vaporwave phrase.
Oh, hell yeah, dude. Yeah.
And, you know, it was a mass casualty event. Basically, what happened was there was some sort of surge to the stage. This was at the beginning of Travis Scott's performance, like when he was taking the stage to perform, where people rushed towards the stage. Lots of people were crushed, trampled. The death toll now is at 9. And Travis Scott, I believe he stopped the show for 15 minutes. And then he continued performing for another 75 minutes while lifeless bodies were being crowd surfed out of the arena, while emergency vehicles were trying to drive into the crowd, but were unable to do so. Meanwhile, his entire set and his entire stage show, in my opinion and many others' opinion, was a little bit satanically tinged, a little bit of a satanic aesthetic going on there. There have been lots of conspiracy theorists believing that this was some sort of blood ritual sacrifice. All of the promotional images for this show involved portals and going through portals
on the other side.
The actual set of the show, in the middle of the stage, was a giant spiral, and in the middle it said "See you on the other side."
Yeah, I saw that.
And and there's there's insane video of Travis Scott just doing auto tune while lifeless bodies are being crowd surfed out of the crowd. It's truly insane.
Truly dark and disturbing times.
Yeah. So I guess my question to you is, do you believe in demons? Do you believe in satanic ritual blood sacrifice? What's your take on this?
So I do believe in demons now, and I think that he was trying to summon them. I don't know. I think it's just so funny to me because I feel like that is such a standard rapper thing to do. I just feel like that's
it's a huge trope, right?
Well, I feel like I can understand that, he was just basically trying to deny it to himself that anything was happening. He was just oh, shit, that's probably nothing. I better just keep on. All those dead bodies that are being carted out and the people chanting, stop the set.
Yeah.
That's probably not, I think he just didn't want to deal with it.
Meanwhile, it's I get those goosebumps every time. Yeah. Disturbing.
And it's so weird because I thought that Astro World was kind of a successor to the aesthetic of Kid Cudi or someone who has a sort of upbeat and positive message of unification. And so this is very surprising to me because
I don't know. Have you listened to that album Astro World?
Oh yeah.
It's a great album.
Yeah, it's really good. But to me, it still sounds like it's often described as being psychedelic. And that's what I get from it. It sounds like a festival album, an album that's designed for somebody to go and then go play big outdoor shows.
I would say that a lot of that festival culture, there is a level of, not satanic energy, but there's a level of dark energy that happens in those places. I've known, I grew up on the Oregon coast around lots of hippies, and I've I know a lot of people that have gone to Grateful Dead shows and stuff, and from what I've heard from them about going to those types of places is that it's really scary. Like, you go there and there's people that are like totally out of their mind on drugs that don't know where they are. Like, they can't even find the entrance to the venue. And it's just like, it's like seeing a bunch of crackheads, you know?
For sure.
And it's like a really like emotionally like defeating sort of thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's always been like, you know, people died at Woodstock. You know what I mean?
Oh,
people died at Grateful Dead concerts. There's always like the flip side of that, like of the hippie vibe is the bleak and dark hangover that comes at the end and the confusion.
Would you say that in your like psychedelic experiences in your life, having taken psychedelic drugs, would you say that that's like a part of that experience? Like a dark and a light to psychedelic experiences?
Oh my God. Well, like for me, psychedelic experiences have been mostly dark. I don't take psychedelics anymore. I stopped. I think the last time I took any kind of psychedelic, I must've been like 21 or 22.
Yeah. If you're older than 23 and taking psychedelic drugs, you need to seriously take a look at yourself.
Yeah. You need to calm the fuck down.
Yeah.
About the second or third time I took mushrooms, I was like, oh, this is really bad. I can't do this. Like, I gotta struggle to get to a point where I'm enjoying the vibes or whatever.
Yeah, I'd say the same for myself. I've probably done mushrooms like between like 10 and 15 times, and I've probably only had like 3 or 4 good experiences.
Yeah, you know? I've done mushrooms, I think, maybe 4 or 5 times in my life. And I've had 2 good experiences. And the rest is just like, God damn, dude. Like, fuck. Like, acid was a little bit better. I think if I hadn't been, like, drinking.
Oh, I had a real demonic experience with acid one time.
Yeah.
And you were there, actually.
Was that freshman year of college?
Yeah, freshman year of college, I took acid. I hadn't eaten anything all day, and so what happened was I took like 20 bong rips because the acid was not hitting. I smoked a bunch of weed, and I hit one bong rip and I started coughing really hard, and we were in a dorm room, and you were playing the song Hawker Boat by Tobacco.
Yeah.
And I remember looking at you and your hair was poofing. It was poofing out into the nether sphere. And it totally freaked me out. And I went into, so this is like a dorm room, right? So you enter, there's like a kitchen area, and then there's like the hanging out area. Between the kitchen and the hanging out area, there is a blanket to cover the smells of smoking weed. You already know this, but I'm telling this to the listeners.
Yeah, you're setting up a scene. Yeah,
so I enter beyond the blanket, and I go into the kitchen to get some water because I'm freaking out. I'm high on acid, and I just started pacing back and forth because the water pressure was really bad, and I started banging my head against the walls. And then our mutual friend, Big Luke, who's a big Russian, scary-looking man.
Oh, yeah, he's a crazy man.
He rips open the blanket, and he's like, what are you doing? I look at him square in the eyes, and I just fainted. I just blacked out, fell down. He grabbed me by my shirt and stopped me from banging my head against the concrete floor. He's probably, like, may have saved my life in that moment. But... So then after that happened, this is an insane story. So we went downstairs and there's a Chipotle at the bottom.
Yeah, I remember this. Yeah,
there's a Chipotle at the bottom of the building that we were at. And for some reason, somebody had left the music on at the Chipotle.
So
it was playing music at like 2 a.m. And we're like, what the fuck is going on? We're hanging out. Smoking cigs outside the Chipotle, and I'm high on acid, you know, wandering around doing weird stuff. I'd somehow make my way into like this decrepit corner where there's a homeless man sleeping, and I didn't notice him, but I accidentally like woke him up. And I remember him looking at me like he startled me because I'd startled him, and he looked at me, and it was, I swear to God, my vision went completely black, and all I could see was his disgusting teeth smiling. Disgusting, just his teeth smiling, and I saw devil horns on his head. And I know that's not normally what happens to people on acid, but like, I swear to God, that's exactly what happened. And and I really thought that I like saw a demon, and it scared the shit out of me. And like to this day, I believe that like psychedelic drugs do like put you in like a space where you are,
you can divine the like whether that guy was actually a demon, or whether that guy had some sort of malicious intent behind him.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I remember after that, he sold this like the weirdest shaped joint to me and Viet, and then we went and smoked it with him. And he was just like,
when that happened, he was like trying to smoke weed with us. And I remember specifically being like, I can't, I knew he was a demon away. And I left, and I could not be around him.
I remember I got some like secondhand like acid trip off of that, because when we walked out and the Chipotle music was playing, it was so like, I was like, where is this music like coming from? Like, is this supposed to like be happening right now? And it was like so surreal. And then we, it was just so weird, because it was like, it just seemed like impossible, because the Chipotle speakers were also like blasted the fuck up. They were like turned all the way to 11. Like
blaring.
They were like super loud. So it was just like so odd. And I just remember being like, is this supposed to be happening right now? And then we met that guy. That guy seemed like just kind of a standard, like sort of like asshole, like self absorbed, homeless fucking drug guy, you know. And then remember
like being homeless, like there's like, you have to be a real piece of shit to be the homeless guy that hangs out around the college
with
18 year olds.
And he was totally waiting for somebody to come so that he can come up to them and be like, hey dude, what's up man, you want to go smoke some weed? But do you remember that later that year he got arrested on campus too?
Yes, one of my a person that lived on my floor, a citizens arrested him. he was screaming some insane shit, and this guy, his name was Jacob. He was like a 6'4".
I remember Jacob. He was also, he dealt weed, right?
No. Jacob was like a weirdo. He was a stand-up comedian. He was like the 6'4" nerd dude. He didn't talk to anybody. He didn't have any friends. But that guy was spouting some crazy shit outside of the Cheerful Tortoise, and Jacob straight up like body slammed him, and hell citizens arrested him until the cops showed up. It was pretty badass.
And that made it
to the news. If you really want to like dig deep into SlimeWire lore, you can look up the news story of that happening.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, that was a formative moment in our history. Whenever I get my bad trips, well, like my first really bad trip, I called the cops on myself, which was like probably brought the, like, I wasn't going to have any good trips after that. And that was like the second time I ever took mushrooms.
Did the cops come? Like,
So I thought I was going to die. So I called 911 and was like, hey, I think I'm dying. Because I ate like an eighth of shrooms, not knowing that was like a lot, especially when I was like 16 years old or like 17. And I did it alone on a school night.
Oh my God.
So I was just like fucking going hog wild in my parents' basement, like just like fucking going insane.
Did
like
your first parents know that you called 911?
The cop came and was like, so I called 911 like on my phone, and I was like, I think I'm gonna die, like holy shit. And they're like, hey, so what's your address, like blah blah blah. And then they called my like home phone. So like my parents like picked up the phone. Yeah, like 3 a.m. And then they, instead of sending an ambulance, they sent a cop. And the cop was basically rang on the doorbell and like opened the door, and he saw like me just like, oh my God. And like my dad being like, huh, shit. And the cop was basically just like, you know, you don't have any more shrooms, do you? And I was like, oh no, I ate them all. And I totally hadn't eaten them all. I still have like another eighth. Yeah. And the cop was like, okay, I think I'm just gonna let you guys are white, it'll be fine. And then he left. Damn. And then I got in a lot of trouble. Yeah. So that was like, that probably soured my, like, any chance of ever enjoying shrooms ever again. And then the other times I took shrooms, it was just kind of like I felt sick, I felt weird, I felt gross.
Specifically like demonic.
No, I just usually think that I've gone completely insane and that I have like broken my brain. Like that specific trip, I like, you know, like you usually don't have like real visuals when you are tripping, right? Like you usually like tripping isn't like you're seeing things and like you're actually like seeing stuff that isn't there, right?
Yeah.
That time I was seeing shit that was not there. Like there was like a point where like I was outside and I was smoking a cigarette and I was like looking at the trees outside of my house, which is always a great thing to do when you're on shrooms. And it was great. I was really enjoying myself. And then I like walked back into my parents' basement and like my field of vision felt like it had been like somebody like smashed it with a hammer. And so like I was like, everything was like fragments. Like my field of vision was like fragmented into a bunch of different little shards of broken glass. And that basically kept on going throughout the entire night. It was fucked up. It was real fucked up.
Okay.
Yeah. So I've never had any demonic experiences. I've just felt like, oh damn, dude, I'm probably gonna die.
Well, yeah. To bring this back to like Travis Scott and the Astroworld Festival, is like maybe I don't know if demons are real.
Yeah.
But like I do know that there is something inherently satanic and demonic about our disgusting culture. And like this Astroworld event, the fact that there is all this like satanic aesthetic and then like something bad happened. Like, you know, that sort of like, it's like, of course, like if everything keeps continuing down this path where, like, I think Tim Heidecker and Greg Turkington like really had a thing with the like the On Cinema, like what is it, the Electric Sun,
the Electric Festival. Sun Music Festival.
Yeah like I heard an interview with Tim Heidecker where he's talking about it, where he's like, yeah, Greg came to me and he's like, these kids are going to these festivals and dying, like they're ODing, like they're at these festivals, like what the fuck is happening?
And
it is a truly like horrible, like fucking insane thing that is just completely normal. And it's like not a good, it's like such a terrible thing that is like completely normalized in our culture, that like kids are going to these festivals and getting so fucked up on drugs that they're literally dying. And then like there's all this like star worship over fucking Travis Scott, who I enjoy, like I think he's a good rapper, but like the fact that he's such this big star that people are willing to trample other people like go to be closer to him at this festival, like there's something really satanic in like a literary way about that, you know.
For sure. I think that what really I want to know is like why the crowd was doing that, you know, because it's like that, like, you know, kids OD at festivals and kids OD at concerts, but you know, the reason this made headlines and made the news was because that doesn't usually happen. Like usually, you know,
Well, it's happened many times in like history, but it's like, it's just the most recent events, you know?
Yeah, but like there was a reaction from like the metalhead world where they were like, this, like, don't blame this on like moshing, because moshing is like super safe and nobody actually gets hurt, right? So like even in like violent like punk shows and violent metal shows, this doesn't happen. So it's like, I don't know why, like, I don't know what caused this particular crowd to do that, you know?
Okay, well, what I would say is that like metalheads are nerds, right?
Yeah.
They're fucking nerds. And most of them are older than, you know, they're about our age or older. And they like, they care about their bodies and they're aware of their bodies. And so when they see somebody hurt, they go and help them. But like, this was the Astroworld Festival. Like the youngest person that died at this event was like 14. Like these are young ass kids that do not know how to like act in like those types of circumstances.
Yeah. How to keep,
and if I was a parent, I would not let my fucking kid go to the Astroworld Festival. Are you fucking insane?
Yeah.
Like, no way.
Well, I think that there is, that's also a part of like Astroworld in particular, Travis Scott's thing is like another thing where you can't tell if it's made for children or adults because it's made for like childish adults and adultish kids, you know?
It's or like, it's just made for like NPCs. It's just made for like, blankest states, the blankest slates.
Well, it has this like Disney Plus kind of feel to it, to me at least. Like, it has a very, like, Travis Scott's music and the general aesthetic of Astroworld is like the, like, it reminds me of like a Nick at Night, like the font that he uses for Astroworld and like that's printed on all the stuff that, like, all the merch that he puts out. Reminds me of like a Nick and Knight special. And, you know, it has like this kind of comforting vibe to it, to me at least. But then it's also adult music about with adult themes because the adults that it's broadcast to are kind of childish. So, so like that's just another line of like, like, is this made for adults? Is this made for children? It's just made for, it's made for both in the worst way possible. Like, it's not, like, there's stuff that's made for children that adults can enjoy, and then there's stuff that's made for adults that children can enjoy, and that's in, like, a good way. But this is, like Marvel movies, this is, like, the inversion of that.
Yeah.
To me. So, yeah, you're not really sure. Like, I feel like a parent could look at the like could listen to a Travis Scott song and see some promotional material of Travis Scott's live shows and be like, oh, this kind of seems like a wholesome sort of thing, you know, or like this just seems like some cool like teen stuff, and not realize what it is, which is like, you know, it's trap, it's adult themes.
Yeah, it's about fucking bitches and feeling bad about fucking bitches.
Yeah, yeah.
As Shinzon said in our last episode. That was one of the greatest parts of that episode.
Yeah, yeah, that was a good, very good summation. I don't know. I don't believe in demons. I believe in just that these guys are kind of stupid. Like the demonic themes of Travis Scott are something that happens in like a bunch of different kinds of music. You know what I mean?
I believe that things can go very bad.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Whether that's demonic or not, I don't know. But like, there's always a possibility that something could go very bad and very, not just bad, but very wrong. Like very not right. Very like, opposites of what should happen.
So here's my question for you. Regardless of whether demons are real or not, do you think that Travis Scott was intending to summon something or create some kind of nether space by sacrificing some teenage kids? Like, do you think that Travis Scott intended to sacrifice on that night?
No, but I don't think that he cares, which I think is the more important thing. I think that whether or not horrible things happen, like, I don't think that Travis Scott cares that people died. I think that he cares that his image is being,
like, torn up. definitely.
And I think that's somehow more evil and more demonic.
Yes, that is certainly reflects the worst excesses of the music industry. I think it's also especially, like, I don't think Travis Scott, and I really don't think any of, like, the trap rappers of today, they're not particularly spiritually inclined or emotionally inclined. Like,
well, it's been a thing since when Chief Keef came out, like, the whole a big thing about his, like, lyricism was that it's nihilistic,
and,
that's permeated, like, hip-hop culture, and that's what's popular now, is, like, being completely nihilistic. And that's why, you know, when somebody like Kanye makes, like, an album about God, that's why that's such, like, a big fucking thing, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
Because, like, the main, like, and that's interesting because, like, in the 90s or whatever, there was loads of hip-hop artists that were, like, trying to be, like, really positive or, like, do, like they had political ideologies or spiritual ideologies, and, like, that stuff doesn't exist anymore. And, like, rap music, even though I love it, like, personally, is, like, it's completely nihilistic.
And so I think that speaks to, like, Travis Scott is not the kind of guy who can, like, address this in a very healthy way. Like, I know he put out, like, a apology statement, but it's like, it's just not, like, if this was somebody like your, like, if this had happened at, I don't know, like a Kanye West tour, like, Kanye West maybe would have felt bad about it and you would have believed it, you know, and there would have been some sort of catharsis. But I just feel like I can't buy any kind of genuine remorse coming out of Travis Scott, you know what I mean?
I mean, what's more demonic, like, the idea of, like, so, yeah, if Travis Scott did have, like, some satanic intention to ritually sacrifice people, is that worse than, like, just not having an insight at all? Like,
not having any kind of moral compass.
It's just, like, the humanness of those actual people that did die, like, not having an impact on your, like, self at all. Do you think he's gonna come back from this?
Well, he's, like, the biggest rapper in the world right now. I mean, he's massive.
He's huge.
Especially, I think his live show is said to be, like, this huge event. I feel like that being the case, that he's known so much for his live show, that might really hurt him, you know, and he'll have to, like, you know, you can't release your next album and have it just be the same shit that you were going to have it be about. You have to now address this. I don't know. I feel like over the long term, he can come back from it. Like, I really do think that it wasn't his fault and he didn't intend for it to happen.
Yeah, I don't think it was his fault either, but I think his, like, response to it was, like, very telling, you know, like, about, like, the sort of, I don't know, like, just, like, nihilism, like, about the
zeitgeist of times, the fact that he didn't stop.
Exactly. He just kept going. The fact that there's a video of him going, while, like, people are being crowd surfed out of the show because they're unconscious. And in many cases, dead. Like, that's truly disturbing. Did you take any look at that belief denial right left political that satanic compass?
Yes, yes, I did.
It's very good. It's very hilarious.
Where did you fall on it?
Well, I mean, I'm definitely the top right, which is actually the top left. If you notice, the left and right are flipped because of demonic influences. But I'm the left conspiracy bro, which says, you know, probably talks about this shit on his stupid podcast. That's exactly what we're doing here. But I have I really enjoy the Luciferian Marxist, where he says conflicted between Promethean anti-moralist revolutionary salvation or deserved eternal suffering under capitalism. And then it says, like a more sincere Euronymous, which is hilarious to me, if you know who Euronymous is.
Euronymous Bach? Bosch?
No, Euronymous is the guy that Burzum killed.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
So Euronymous was like a Satan worshiper in the black metal world, but he was like super political, and then Burzum murdered him.
So
that whole thing is very funny.
I'm sorry to cut you off here, but I have to piss like so bad right now.
Yeah, like, I'd like to so pee too. I'd love to pee.
I gotta go. I'm sorry. I gotta take care of it right now. Yeah. All right, and I'm back.
I'm here. All right. Well, let's move on to the I know we had a lot of things on the docket, but we like talked like for about an hour about Astroworld. I know, what else were we gonna talk about? We were talking about Colin Powell. That's dumb.
Yeah, fuck that. Yeah.
We were gonna talk about, let's just move on to the dream catalog, your dream of dreams.
Oh yes, yeah.
Your year of dreams.
Yeah, the year of dreams.
I thought it was like, so to some background information is that Lucid, I'm gonna call him Lucid now.
Yeah, sure.
But
respect the man's wishes.
Formerly known as HKE, Lucid has been going off on Twitter about how much he hates vinyl for like a while, and then he posted that picture of the Dream Punk Meerkat. Did you see that?
Yeah, I did. Yeah,
that was hilarious.
You sent it to me.
Like, because he knows that a million nerds need the Birth of a New Day vinyl. Like, they want it so bad. So he posts, if this Dream Punk Meerkat can get this many likes, we'll do a Birth of a New Day vinyl. Knowing that, so the other background information is that the vinyl industry has been completely fucked by Adele specifically.
Oh, yeah.
Specifically, Adele and her marketing team has taken over every vinyl plant in the world, apparently. And so now zero indie labels can press vinyl for a year because they have to make the Adele vinyls, which is hilarious because, I mean, come on, that's so funny. And so he's going, if you really want it and you're really willing to wait a year, all you have to do is repost the Dream Punk Meerkat and we'll do it. Like a genius move, like the funniest. I know, it's so move. Funny. It's so good.
Honestly, yes, this cycle of promotional material by HKE is like the funniest thing that he's done so far. Like, I always thought that the raccoon mythology and like the like all that was a little bit like, I don't know, it was a tad much. But this shit's just hilarious. Yeah, the Dream Punk Meerkat is just right in the pocket, baby.
The fact that he's like taking Dream Punk and like whittling it down to just like, oh, here's a picture of a Dream Punk Meerkat, and it's just it's just a meerkat superimposed over like 2814.
Yeah, like that's what makes it Dream Punk. Like,
yeah,
savage. Absolutely savage. I don't know. There's just something that's like raccoons are, that's a little bit try hard, but like a meerkat is like a really funny animal, you know? So I'm all on board.
And then he even dropped the meerkat thing and then like made it about otters too. Started posting all these pictures of otters. And so in the new Your Year of Dreams, which is 13 vinyls being pressed by Dream Catalog at some point in time, theoretically within the next year, because we don't know what Adele's gonna do next. The funniest part of it to me is that the like super hyper exclusive one is the Birth of a New Day vinyl with otter fur vinyl with otter fur which is just it's just brown and it doesn't match the color scheme of the album at all. It just looks gross and disgusting and like it's so
I think
funny.
It looks good. I think it looks really good, but I feel like my theory about what happened with that is that otter brown is like a type of like whatever like vinyl pressing service he went through, like that was an option to get it in, and then he was like, oh, this will be so funny and it'll like continue the theme of like small furred mammals that I've been like associating with the Dream Catalog. So like he decided to do that. That's what I think
happened. It's so funny that that email was like such a great email to receive. It's like I was done. Like I was laughing the second I opened it, and then when it gets to the gif of the like mailman with the mustache, like I was dying laughing. I was laughing out loud. Like it's so amazing. I don't know.
Here I'm looking in. I'm looking up the because I got that email too. Because I'm on the mailing list.
Hell yeah, you gotta be on the mailing list. Like come on,
you gotta be. You gotta Who be are on you? The list. Yeah. Fuck you. Your year of dreams. Dream catalog. Bing. I just love the like the promotional material of being like, don't lift a finger and we'll do all the heavy lifting as like, you know, we'll deliver it direct to your door. It was like so pleasant and cute.
Yeah.
It's definitely like the funniest thing that he's done, I think. Props to him for that. God damn it.
I've got it up here. I skipped to the end because they talk about all the different albums that they're putting on vinyl. There's some fire albums that they're putting on vinyl. They have a gif of a bunch of otters clapping their hands because on top of all we have announced, we have a very special product launching alongside Your Dream of Dreams, limited to only 200 copies exclusively, a very rare and special edition of 2814's Birth of a New Day in a luxurious otter fur brown shade. Come on, like look at that picture and tell me that the brown does not match the fucking cover. Like
It doesn't, it doesn't really match. I don't know, I feel like that brown and purple kind of works for me. I feel like it works.
Brown and purple, the greatest color scheme,
dude. It's a sick color scheme.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I love, yeah, I just love the like concept that it's a thing that you can order right now that's gonna get to your house in a year.
Yeah. Well, they're being very matter of fact about it, but that's like literally what like 90% of like vaporwave physical pre-order shit is about. And that's a big culture in vaporwave now, is like pre-ordering vinyls and cassettes and stuff because they don't want to press stuff until they know that they have a demand for it. And it'll be like, yeah, pre-order this. It's going to take, I mean, maybe not a year, but in many cases, like even before this Adele shit, it was like, yeah, it'll take 6 months. And, you know, I'm just a guy in a basement running this label. So like, you can't trust these people at all. And like, there's so many scams that have happened. And it's like, it's totally like, I don't know. I've never been like a vinyl collecting guy. That just seems super weird and autistic to me.
I love how it says, after the year of dreams, one day you will hear that van pull up and the box of your treasured possession will arrive. Like they're not even like pretending like there's going to be a fixed date that they're going to give you. It's just one day you'll get there. Someday.
Yeah.
someday it'll come. Like, yeah, he's not even pretending that it's gonna, like, that he's gonna tell you when it's gonna be there.
But some of these albums that they have are good albums, and some of them are albums that we have reviewed on the podcast.
Absolutely, yeah. I'm looking at that Fentanyl Embrace, Cyberpunk 2020.
Yeah, that's one of the best of last year. They've got LYF by Hong Kong Express. We reviewed that. We also reviewed, there was another one that we reviewed, Venus Cloud City by Autumn and Sabaris. We reviewed that. Floral Shop 2, amazing.
Oh, of course.
I'm going to get a CD copy. So this is a good segue to talk about the Evolve magazine that they're pushing now. Yeah, I signed up for the fucking, I'm going to get the physical copy. So I haven't read it all yet because I want to read it as intended via the physical, but I'm going to also receive a CD of Floral Shop 2 with it. So, but did you read it?
Yeah, I read it. I read it except for one of the interviews in the middle, because it really is mostly just an interview magazine. Like, that's what it was.
So I guess first off, do you, like, I think it's really cool that they're doing this. Do you think that they're going to be able to continue doing this, or do you think this is a one-off?
Well, based on the amount of people that he got for the first release on Patreon to support him, there were like, what, like 50 people that got so I mean, just the general weight of Dream Catalog, like the brand behind it, I'm hoping that he can drum up support for it. It was
pretty cool. But I'm just, I'm worried that like, they have a lot of interviews in this first issue. I'm worried that they're, like, you know, going all out for the first issue, and then, like, it's gonna wear thin, and they're not gonna have as much content for the next, because it's supposed to be monthly.
Ideally. So that was what I thought was, what concerned me was, like, I don't know what they're going to put in there, you know, like, cause this first one was really just a bunch of like a bunch of interviews. And then like a one page, I think there were three like pieces of like, sort of like,
literature
writing. I don't know exactly what to call it. It was like, I wouldn't call it like nonfiction, but they were just like little one page things. And one of them was about a guy who is like 26 and like completing his undergraduate degree and like doesn't go to class anymore and is just trying to think of ideas for businesses and how he like waitlists and stuff. And it was kind of like, I feel like it's like a nice slice of life of a millennial who doesn't know what they're doing in their lives. So it was kind of cool. And then there was another one about a guy who went to a sober camp that was like a Christian sobriety camp. And the whole thing was about how it was really a cult. And then there was HKE's contribution, which was like, you know, just like imagine the tone of like the kind of stuff that he was writing on his Twitter
earlier
this year. And that's basically what it was. It was just like, I'm in like a dark room and they're giving me like my rations once a week. And, you know, he fit in some stuff about like modern society is like so safe and secure, but they don't let anybody thrive and stuff like that. And it was cool. It was nice. But yeah, like I'm hoping that they can figure out like just more stuff to put in there, you know? Like I would love to hear, like, I feel like they could have like good, like monthly, like recurring features. Like, you know, a really good one would be new Vaporwave albums coming out this month.
So if they hate Vaporwave, it's not about Vaporwave. And they do have
They have
the Dream Punk Spotlight where they're talking about all the new.
Okay. Let's just say from here on out, I'm going to be using the word Vaporwave as a pejorative term that covers all of this kind of stuff. I know that Lucid might not appreciate it, but you know, that's just how it's going to be.
Yeah.
For me, at least. You know, they could put in some reviews in there, something like that. I mean, like all I'm saying is that they need more, like, variety of articles in the magazine.
Well, spoiler alert, if you're listening, Lucid or Chima, Ikemen Sensei wants to write for the Evolve Mag.
Yes, I have a couple of drafts that I'm working on. Nothing has been set in stone, but I think I have a couple of good ideas. And I want to bring that dream punk aesthetic and the general dream punk philosophy to life through prose. So yeah, hit me up if you're interested. I think I want to keep it to like the size of like what those guys wrote. It was like both of those little articles were like about a page, I think like 600 words or something like that, maybe like 1,000 words. So yeah.
Yeah, I'd love to write something for the mag too. I'll try. I've got some ideas. Yeah.
Yeah, let's get some shit together. Let's flex our literary muscles together.
Yeah, or we'd love a text-based interview of the SlimeWire Pod Boys as well.
Well, what we should do is have a monthly segment where we review a dream punk album.
Oh yeah, definitely, for sure.
Yeah, we can use the Roger and Ebert of dream punk.
Yeah, we should have because I just listened to the HKE and Sangam split, or not but collaborative album called Upgrade Yourself. I listened to that tonight while I was walking home through the city. It's the best way to listen to any of HKE's music is while you're walking through the city.
Of course.
And yeah, it was really good. I really enjoyed it. And the last track is incredible. it's super funny. The switch to the church organs and the vocals in the last half was I was not expecting it. I thought it was great. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I listened to what was the first album that he produced? That he made after Dream Catalog came back online, getting something with it.
Lucid to it.
Yeah, I re-listened to that last night, and I thought it was a lot better than I first gave it credit for. And
yeah, we didn't shit on it last episode, but we were underwhelmed by it.
Yeah, I really did admire how it was like a total synthesis of like every sound that Lucid had been doing up until then. So that was kind of cool.
Word. Well, do you want to move into, I guess we are supposed to review some music.
Yeah, we got some stuff on the docket to review. Let's go.
All right. What do you want to talk about first? I think, so this isn't like dream punk related or vaporwave related at all, but I mean, our like one of our main things is like we're lowbrow dudes talking about high art. And one of the highest caliber artists of the last 10 years has been Young Thug.
Oh, absolutely.
But unfortunately, Young Thug's new album is not high art.
Oh, yeah. It, by no measure can it be said to be any sort of high art.
It's incredibly underwhelming. And to this, like, I've re-listened to it multiple times. And the first track is the only one that I like.
Yeah. I would say the only one that I really liked was the one with Juice WRLD, which has a title which I cannot repeat on live air.
Rich N-word shit.
Yeah. I like that one.
I mean, yeah, that's a good track. It's really good on speakers. It sucks on headphones. But yeah. You know, when I first like turned it on, like the first track is good. And then he spits that bar, that legendary bar, where he says,
"Oh yeah,
I always knew I wasn't going to be gay." And from that moment, it's like you're supposed to know, like, okay, this is the Young Thug I've always known and loved.
Yeah, yeah. This is the great, has the capacity to say great, shit like that.
Yeah, the great. And then, yeah, it just shits out, like, halfway after that.
Continues to not deliver.
It's really sad.
I think that it's like this, like the a rapper's hubris of wanting to transcend their genre and not be known as just a rap artist and try to do something outside of those confines. But then the thing is that like they don't realize that like this kind of like mellow California like stoner acoustic guitar music, like it's only good if you have a really good songwriter. Like it's not just good because it has guitars and sounds kind of nostalgic. Like you have to write a really good song, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And this
Young
is just
Thug's
like
already that. Done that. Young Thug has done that before. Like he has the album Beautiful Thugger Girl.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Which is an amazing. Better. Yeah.
Leads better. Yeah. Like so he already kind of explored this sound on that album and did a much better job. And also I feel like on that album, the gimmick was that it was country rap, which is much more interesting to me, like a country rap fusion album than like a, I don't know, I like a Beach Boys rap hybrid album. I don't know what to, like a Justin Bieber, like a 2012 Justin Bieber and trap hybrid album.
Well, the whole like the thesis of the album was it's called Punk. And it's about Young Thug, like, you know, telling you more about himself, to being more introspective, telling you more about, like, it's not just party music. This is like, he's making a real rapper's album, but then he is barely introspective on it. And he's not like, and he barely raps on it. Like, it's just like, it just shit the bed the entire time. And it like really confirms the theory that I had, which I stole from a Pitchfork review of So Much Fun, where Young Thug is he was a true shooting star that we all got to see. And it was like, it was truly amazing watching him like climb to the top with his like insane tracks and like do like shit that no rapper has ever dreamed of, and like he became like a millionaire
immediately
from like nothing, and like by like, and the interesting thing about Young Thug is that like he's not like Andre 3000 or Nas or anything, like he's not like, it's not like he's been grinding to do this stuff, you know.
He
just happens to accidentally be a genius.
For sure.
But it only works some of the time, you know.
I don't know, I mean the thing about like the earlier Young Thug albums that got big was that they sounded so like, I mean what I always loved about Young Thug in his fashion and like presentation and stuff and his lyrics and the choices he made on like which beats to rap over was that it sounded, and like we've talked about this to death, but like it sounds so strange and heterodox to rap, but so like organic, like he's not trying to be
he's not trying at all. I saw an interview with him recently where they asked him like, what would you tell yourself 10 years ago? And he said, I would tell myself 10 years ago that you were right. That you were going to be a millionaire. Like you were right all along. You were always going to be a star. You were always going to be a musical genius.
Yeah. You know? So he just has never changed that. Yeah. He has no self-criticism that he would want to give his former self. I remember watching an interview with him where he talks about like, you know, ever since I was a little kid, I just knew about clothes. Like I just knew how to dress. Like I just knew how to have drip. I just knew how to do it, you know?
Yeah.
And like, it's like, yeah, you did. Like you totally did. So I think that the thing here and now is that this is Young Thug trying, and it sucks now because he's trying to do something.
Exactly.
Like he's trying to do something he's not, you know? And yeah, when he gets introspective and when he tries to create like a legacy album, it's like, nah, like it was so much better when you were just, when you were just making party music, like.
Yeah, yeah, and like why. Your party music was, like I said, it was accidentally genius.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And I don't say that like, and I don't mean genius like, oh, it's really good. I mean, it was literally genius music.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
yeah, like the legacy album that you're trying to make now was Jeffrey. Like an album that you're supposed to like take an album you're supposed to take seriously as like a piece of art. Like that was what you were doing. Like that is what you do. Like that's what you have always done. You just never recognized that aspect of it. And yeah, now that you're trying to make a mature album, it's just not good. So okay, what exactly didn't you like about this album? Because I have a couple of things I want to point out about it, but specifically did you not like?
I mean, honestly, like, I don't know, like, I don't know about musical theory, or I don't know about production. All I know is that, like, when something hits, it hits, and when something doesn't hit, it doesn't hit. And I remember Jeffrey is like 9 songs.
Yeah.
And every single one of them is amazing.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
Every single track on that album is God tier.
Yeah.
This album is like 25 songs, and there's like 2 or 3 that you can pick out of the bunch, and the rest just sound like the other song. Like, there's no distinguishable features. And when you listen to it, like from beginning to end, you have that first track, which is fire.
Mm-hmm.
And then you immediately get hit with like J. Cole, like doing like a horrible fucking verse. And it's just like, yeah, it's just terrible. And yeah, I don't know, like that's basically like there's no inherent value to it to me.
Yeah, I think that going off like the
but the difference is like, so much fun, right, his album before that also like 25 songs. And it's also like, you know, a lot of the tracks are indistinguishable from each other, but almost every single one of those songs is dummy lit. Like,
you
play it and it's just fire. And like, I don't know. It's just like enjoyability, basically.
Yeah. So this album was not designed to have hits or slaps. It was supposed to be more introspective, but I feel like what he like he wanted to make these like intimate sounding acoustic guitar tracks. And like, there is some elements of it that's like interesting to me, just in like how he like blends sort of like hip hop production sounds with like acoustic guitars. But the flip side of that is that it sounds like he's trying to like, it sounds very much like a rapper trying to make a like pop song, like a folk song.
Like an Ed Sheeran type.
Yes, like an Ed Sheeran. Exactly. That's what I've been looking for. Like, it's a rapper trying to make an acoustic ballad. And like, in order to make a good acoustic ballad, and I don't want to be like pretentious here or anything, like the only reason that anybody likes that kind of music is because there's like good song structure in it and like hooks that like pay off based on like building up a good sequence of like a chorus and a verse, blah blah blah. And this just sounds like he's taking like 1 or 2 like guitar licks and just like sampling them over and over again, which of course we here on SlimeWire don't have a problem with inherently, but it doesn't sound.
We only have a problem with it if it's bad.
Yeah, like
if it's good, we don't have a problem with it.
Yeah, it doesn't create any kind of like the deep emotional resonance or like deep introspective feelings that he's going for, and it also doesn't slap. So yeah, it's just not good. It just doesn't work.
Yeah.
And like, I can't point you to like any particular song that I didn't like on here, because yeah, they all just blend together, and like it's like three tracks of that sound before you get anything that you might want to listen to, and by then I'm like tuned out and I'm just not engaged.
I mean, I can point you to songs that I don't like on this project. Like,
okay,
well, that's not hard for me.
let's hear them.
I mean, Stressed with J. Cole is terrible. Stupid / Asking, the third track, terrible.
Yeah.
The Gunna verse, like the Gunna collab on Recognize Real, bad. The song with the song with Post Malone and A$AP Rocky is laughably bad.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
it's
yeah.
Truly terrible. Like, yeah. You can't, there's nothing you can do to like
salvage it, to
there's
defend it.
There's no defense for that track at all. It's horrible. And even the last track with Mac Miller, it's like supposed to be like, oh, Mac Miller's dead, and like he's getting Mac Miller on
memorialized,
like a posthumous verse. But that song's been out for years and nobody liked it 3 years ago. Like, literally.
Yeah, dude.
Andy took off. So that song had a Trippie Redd verse on it. And Trippie Redd isn't even like, I don't even think he's that good, but like that, he had a great verse on that song, and they took him, they took the best verse off of the song. Like, it's just stupid. It's just dumb. And I mean, like, my main thing is like, there's a lot to be said for Jeffrey, which is nine songs.
Yes.
Like, it's a very concise album with nine perfect songs. And that's what Young Thug should be doing. Like, don't make 25 shitty songs, make 10 perfect songs.
Perfect. Yeah, yeah. 10 perfect bangers. Yep. Yep, couldn't agree more.
And I'm even more angry about the new Lil Ugly Mane album.
Oh, yeah, yeah. that's a great segue.
Shit.
Oh, yeah, it's pure shit. I mean, I think with both of these albums, I had, like, a point, like, where you listen to it and I'm kind of like, oh, this is like, well, this is so weird, like, this isn't what he usually does. Oh, this is like an experiment. Okay,
that's the kind of interesting, like every type of anytime I've heard somebody talk about this new Lil Ugly Mane album is like, wow, I'm so impressed that he's so versatile. But it's like,
yeah,
versatility doesn't matter if it sucks. Like,
yeah, it's like, well, that just means that you're not versatile. It just means that he can't make that album. Like, he's not versatile in that way because he can't pull that sound off.
I honestly didn't. I couldn't get through it. Like, I didn't finish it. I listened to it, and do you know the song Styrofoam?
Yeah.
Yeah, once I got to that, I was like, okay, I'm done. I'm not listening to the rest of this.
That's about like halfway, or a little bit earlier than halfway through, right?
It is the sixth track, and it has like, it's like, it's a sample of like an old timey, like waiting at the train station folk song. And yes, I was just like,
I know what you're talking about.
It literally sounds like, I don't know. It's like early 2000s, like Moldy Peaches, or like
King,
like fucking like Daniel Johnston type
such
stuff.
A weird it's such a strange mix of like 90s alternative music,
this like early millennial obsession with like being like a like hitchhiker like folk music tropes. It's just like truly like that wasn't cool 15 years ago, and it's not cool now.
He's taking like the worst nostalgia, like the worst music of the 1990s, and having that influence this album,
or
which is like,
or like I view it more as like the 2000s, like to Decemberists type stuff.
Well, I think there's like a 90s trope in here, because there's also like a little bit of like, I don't know, sublime in this. You know what I mean?
Also disgusting.
Yeah, absolutely.
As a man who grew up as a hippie listening to Sublime and loving Sublime, like, yeah. I will say that, like, I know that Sublime is shitty. Like, I know that Sublime is inherently a shit band.
Yeah.
But there's something to be said for that everybody that grew up with Sublime knows all of their songs. There's something to be said for that. Like, yeah, they're obviously working in some way if you remember this stuff. But like, yeah, he's like, it's like he's covering the worst Sublime songs that nobody remembers.
Yeah. Yeah. So like the only thing that I can like imagine with this is that this whole album was just supposed to be like a joke or some kind of like, fuck you to everybody who likes Lil Ugly Mane, you know?
It's definitely like, a fuck you. I don't know if it's a joke though.
I feel like it's gotta be. I can't like... There's no, like, it's a total break from everything that he did before. And, like, I don't know, like, I feel like he's such a good musician. I don't know how he can imagine that his voice sounds good. Like, he sounds like, that's the other thing. It sounds like a, it sounds like a mumble rapper trying to now be, like, a 2000s indie rock musician. Like, his voice sounds like, just the most passionless, like nasally, like he's just not, it sounds like he's not invested into it at all, which confuses me because I feel like he's writing and producing all of this music. So I don't know why he just sounds dead inside while he's while he's recording it, you know?
Yeah. So that's actually like, similar to a thing I was thinking where, like, if you are, like, heralding this based on, like, this is an example of him being versatile.
Yeah.
Like, you already have three-sided tape one, three-sided tape two, and the third side of tape. Like, if you're familiar with Lil Ugly Mane, you should know that he's versatile.
Yeah. You already know that he's one of the most prolific and versatile,
like, you don't need to be reminded of that. And and what's good about those albums is that every little like when he dips his toes into like different styles, he does them really well on those projects.
Mm-hmm. And then he moves on to I think there's also something to be said for three-sided mixtape, that the fact that it's a bunch of different genres within one project that he's trying gives it like, A, there's the idea that he's like, maybe it's like, okay, you're not supposed to take this too seriously. I'm not committing to anything. And it makes just the fact that he can do it so much better, you know?
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
He chooses to, and then he's just like, okay, well, yeah, that was just like my little like 70s psychedelic, like prog rock thing that I had for just like 3 minutes. Anyways, let's move on and let's do something else. But it all still, it still does sound like a hip hop mixtape, like something that is made to be a like beat tape that you could theoretically pull out beats from and rap over.
And the fact that it's supposed to be like a collection of like loose ends and B-sides, and that's better than this. Which is, for all intents and purposes, like him going full on into a project and being like trying to make some sort of declarative statement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I just don't know like who wanted this or why he would want to do this. And like if this is going to be something that he's now trying to rebrand himself as. And
I mean, I understand that he can't do Lil Ugly Mane, like he can't do Mr. Thug Isolation Part 2. Like that wouldn't work. It's not like that album was really cool and really important in 2012, but it's been 9 years. He can't do that again.
Yeah.
So I understand why he's trying to do something different, but like, I mean, shit, it just has to be good. And like, this just is not. Like, it's just not good at all.
Yeah, it's like, really bad. I mean, like, that first track, I was, like, intrigued about it.
Yeah, it just sounds, it's like, okay. And then you're like,
this is like some silly clown toy world. Yeah, yeah. Because I thought that what was going to follow that first track was going to then be, like, hard in some way. I thought it was going to be then Lil Ugly Man.
Yeah, so I remember, like, I remember listening to the first, I think, like, the first two tracks, I was actually, like, into it, and I was like, oh, this is cool because it's, like, an 80s, like he sounded like a goth band, like a Tears for Fears.
Yes.
And I was like, oh, this is actually cool. And then it just, like, immediately transitioned into this, like, what's that? What's, like, the Postal Service? Or, like,
yeah,
but, like, a way worse version of the Postal Service, like, afterwards. And yeah, he couldn't hold it together. I don't know.
Yeah, and I think there's, like, underneath these little folk songs, you can tell that it's, like, the same, like, he's using what he is good at. Like, he's really great at making, like really good beats and using good samples and making these like thick like soundscapes or whatever. And so I feel like every song, like there is like a good beat or like a good sample in it, but then it's just like used, it's just every other element in every other song just sucks ass. There was that song, Beach Harness on there. Beach Harness was my favorite one of the bunch.
If it's after Styrofoam, I did not listen to it.
I think it was, and it gives me like a little bit of like a Plunderphonics, like Avalanches. It actually gives me strong Avalanches vibes. I know you don't like the Avalanches, but I did.
And, no, I love the Avalanches. That's fine.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh. Well, the first album, what is
yeah, it? Yeah, the since second I album was good. Yeah, yeah. Since yeah, I Left
since
You.
Since I Left You is great. It's an amazing album.
Yeah, yeah. So Beach Harness gives you a little bit of that, but then it's like, I didn't want that from Lil Ugly Man. I'm not interested in it. Exactly. Yeah, so like the only reason that I could think, like I'm just flabbergasted at why he specifically wants to do this. Like why, like what are you thinking? Like why are you, like all of your music has been so experimental and like boundary pushing and like really dark and gritty, and like so like is it the same person that's making this? Are you supposed to take this as an album? And I like the only thing I can think is that he just made this as like a fucking joke and like a fuck you to anybody that likes him, and you're supposed to listen to it like it's a purposely shitty bad album.
You know the track he did called on Doing an Evil Deed Blues?
No, not familiar with that track.
I'm sure you've heard it. I've definitely showed it to you, but it's a track that he made like, so like, I mean, Lil Ugly Mane's like an interesting character. Like he was like a big like meme rapper on 4chan back in the day. Like his stuff was pushed on 4chan. Everybody loved him and he became this like underground favorite. And like he was never really trying to be that, you know. And he released On Doing an Evil Deed Blues was supposed to be his last song when it came out. And the conceit of that song was like he has like there's bars on that song where he's like, I used to like to rap because like I was just having fun. I used to like to rap because I was like super into my own bars. And then he says like, but like rap is like a thing and I'm not like a part of it. And like, I was never supposed to be a part of it. And there's other rappers that put their time in to like make this genre. And I'm just like this lame white kid trying it. And like the whole idea of the song is like, he's like making fun of like these lame white kids that are super into Lil Ugly Mane when there's like other great rappers that came before him that he's like drawing his styles from. And I mean, a big part of like Mr. Thug Isolation is the Memphis influence, the horrorcore influence, the like Houston influence. And it's like, you should just get into those artists. Like, you should just get into that scene. And there's
instead of listening to me.
And there's, you know, there's fucking hours and hours and hours of incredible music from Memphis and Houston. But like, Lil Ugly Mane made, like, he was better than that because it was like that in the internet age, you know, like it made complete sense for millennials and for like my generation of people going on 4chan and discovering Lil Ugly Mane.
Yeah. Well, I think that Mr. Thug Isolation especially is like, it's self-aware of like it takes a lot of the elements of Memphis rap and like Southern rap and is more self-conscious about like the esoteric feeling that you get when you listen to those albums and like the sort of like I think like the vastness of that scene, like the feeling of like finding this like strange occult looking musical relic from the past that nobody knows about. Like Mr. Thug Isolation is like self-conscious about that, if you know what I'm trying to say. Like
definitely.
We've talked about it before of like when you listen to it, it sounds like the strangest like shit. It's strangest and most genius stuff that you find in like a bargain bin like at a music store, like a CD at the bottom of a bargain bin at a CD store somewhere, and you listen to it and it's like, oh my god, it's amazing. But so like that's what the worth is in Mr. Thug Isolation and in Lil Ugly Mane's earlier music, is that he's aware of like the experimental potential of that sound that he's going off of in a way that the original artists might not be, or that isn't really the point of the work that he's drawing from.
Yeah, which is a thing that we've talked about. I'm not sure if we've talked about it on the show, but I know we've talked about it, you and me, about like Memphis artists like Lowdown to Sinista. Like, the great part, the great thing about like his album is that it sounds like somebody that like truly is like at the end of his rope, and it truly sounds like he, there's zero irony, there's like, it's completely sincere. And and like Lil Ugly Mane is not that. It's obviously ironic and obviously sort of well, I mean, it's sincere, but it's like not in the way that old Memphis shit is.
Like all that old Memphis shit is made to you know, blast in your car. Like it's made for gangbangers to blast in their car, and they're not, I mean, probably they are, and they do recognize the sort of the deep weirdness of that music, but that's not its primary purpose. And I do think there is something to, there's both a positive and a negative to Lil Ugly Mane as an outsider looking in on that musical genre. And like what he made with Mr. Thug Isolation is this outsider album that, but he's the only one that could recognize the deep weirdness and draw out like that deep weirdness in that style, which is both good because it created this really cool paranoid sounding internet relic. But on the other hand, there is sort of this like, you know, I don't want to say it's like a culturally appropriative thing, but like, yeah, he's a white guy, a white 4chan guy who's making this genre of music that is traditionally a black genre of music. So I could see how
not just traditionally, like, it's not that it's traditionally black, it's that it's traditionally like made by people that are like on the fringe of society.
Society, yeah, for sure.
Like, truly dissolute. Like the only reason that Lowdown to Sinista album, for listeners, I'm talking about Coming for Your Soul by Lowdown to Sinista. The only reason that album sounds as intense and hectic and like as it does is because like it was made by a dude that was like truly like the like a scour on society. Like,
yeah, a scourge on society. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And so maybe Little Ugly Maine doesn't have that. But
and
still...
well, he accepts that, and he he articulated that artistically in that track on Doing an Evil Deed Blues.
That's the whole
point of that track.
Yeah, and so
anything he does after that is sort of like with this tongue in cheek, like, yeah, but I still want to release music as Lil Ugly Maine because obviously I have this massive audience. So why don't I try and do something a little bit more artistic? And of course, the little bit more artistic thing is making a shitty Postal Service album. Like,
yeah, for sure. Yeah, but there was stuff that he released after, I presume he released Undoing an Evil Deed Blues that was...
Not really. That was like his last like rap thing. Well, he did what's it called? Passion Scepter / Dirt Mystery. I know I've showed you that track.
Passion Scepter / Dirt Mystery. Is that off of...
It was just a single, but it was like this insane like noise rock trap song. I don't know. It's difficult to describe, but if you listen to it, you would know exactly what it was.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, he did the, what is it? Wedding the Bed, Bedwetters, fucking...
Yeah, he did Bedwetter, which I never really listened to. It was, like, a super introspective, like it was sort of like a, like, his version of, like, the Lil Peep, like, emo rap thing that was happening around that time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he also did, I mean, he did Oblivion Access, which is one of the wildest,
true
albums of all time, and I think Oblivion Access is also still credibly within that kind of like Dirty South rap style, right? Like it is still, it sounds like a trap album that's just wilding the fuck out, right? Or am I just
kinda, it's like a lot of the lyrical stuff on Oblivion Access, like looking back, is like kind of cringy.
Yeah,
but no, it wasn't like Dirty South, like it wasn't like party music at all.
Well, okay, it's not party music, but the production quality is, I think it sounds the same as like whatever tools he was using to make Mr. Thug Isolation, he uses the same tools to make Oblivion Access and really most of like whatever he's making. And those like it sounds like somebody is using a studio that a guy from the Dirty South might have used to create a noise album. Whereas this one does not really sound like that. It kind of does. You can tell that he's still, and that's the one thing that I would say, like, you can still tell that he's like a production master. Like he's so goddamn good at making this, like, it still sounds like analog. Like it doesn't sound like he's just using like a digital audio workspace. But it's just, he's using it to make bad, dumb music now, I guess.
Yeah. Okay, so now I have to pee really bad.
Okay, go.
All right. Okay, I'm back.
And he's back.
All right, go on with your thoughts on Oblivion Access.
I think I was finished with what I was saying about Oblivion Access, just that it sounds like Mr. Thug Isolation just more experimental and more wild, wacky.
Mm-hmm.
This kind of sounds like that, but I just can't imagine that it's anything other than him just saying, stop listening to me, don't listen to my music anymore. because it sucks. That's okay. Really all I can imagine.
Did we have anything else we were supposed to talk about?
The Live Love ASAP?
Okay, yeah, we can briefly do that. Live Love ASAP, legendary rap album. It's not like my main thing when I was that. So it just recently got put on Spotify for the 10-year anniversary. 10 years ago today, we were listening to Live Love ASAP, like getting hype at college parties.
Yes.
But so yeah, like the really interesting thing about Live Love ASAP is that it's like it's two things at once, and that it's like a perfect like college party rap album. And then it's also like this love letter to like the internet cloud rap scene of the time.
Yeah. So it has obviously the iconic Clans Casino tracks.
Oh, of course.
That are just like, and yeah, like listening to those, I was like,
it was at that time, Clans Casino was giving beats to ASAP Rocky, Robba Banks, and Lil B. And that was it. Like, there's the only people rapping over Clams Casino beats, and they like those beats informed like a generation of people, you know.
Yeah. And so this is basically how Clams Casino got big. Probably mostly through this album. Like the
It was like, this album and then like in the huge cult of personality around Lil B. But yeah, it was mostly this. Like if you're talking mainstream recognition, it was all about Live Love ASAP.
Bass. Listening to those beats was a blast from the past, and also just like a like damn, like those are just timeless fucking amazing music. Like it's so good. Like nobody's ever made anything like it before. Nobody will make anything like it now. And yeah, like those beats are just fucking just so good. And yeah, I really liked, like I did not have an interest in ASAP Rocky when I was in college. I just, you know, his music was on in the background while I was doing my thing. And yeah, this is a great album. I love this album.
I remember I got out hipstered by somebody. I went to a house party, and some dude was like, "Oh man, have you heard about this new rapper ASAP Rocky?" And I was 17, wide-eyed, didn't know what was going on. I was like, "Oh, are you talking about ASAP Rock?"
The guy was
like, no, cut that shit out right now. Like that shit is lame, bro. I'm talking about ASAP Rocky, which is a completely like, it's the complete opposite of ASAP Rock, you know?
Yeah.
And from that moment on, like, I remember like I went home and I listened to the ASAP Rocky Live Love ASAP mixtape. And I actually, no, it was before the mixtape came out. He just had like a few singles. I think he had Purple Swag and Peso and maybe Fashion Killa. And it completely changed my trajectory of like music. And all of a sudden I stopped caring about like lyrical rap. And I was like, oh, there's like this whole other thing. Like, and it's not just dumb club music. It's actually like really cool, interesting music that just also happens to be completely antithetical to any sort of lyrical like hip hop.
I was surprised by the amount of like he's not trying, and the whole point is that he's like, he's not trying to be like a lyrical rapper, but
he literally spells things out. Like he literally spells words in his rap, which is so dope.
But there's stuff like on, I think the listening through it, the track that really stood out to me was Trilla.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
That beat is incredible.
That's a great beat. And I love the, he does like so many different little flows and like different like vocal manipulations on it and like skips around. And yeah, it was really good. And like he even has like a narrative rap, like the Houston Old Head track.
Houston Old Head is it's by far my favorite track on the project, and it's like I think it's like the underground classic. Like it's like the underground favorite.
Yeah,
when you talk to people about Live Love ASAP, they point out that track.
Yeah, and that beat is so cool and good and like weird, and like the manipulation that they did on it is so cool. And yeah, just like the story of him talking to his elder and
his how Houston his, like, old head.
Yeah, it's Houston Old Head, and the whole idea that it's like, yeah, when you got problems, you just go, you talk to your old head, and that's he'll know what to say, he'll know what to do. Like I've never heard like a rap song about like respecting your elders, you know. Like I didn't know that this part of like rap culture existed. I mean, there's obviously people that are like, you have to respect like the legends of hip hop or whatever. But I didn't know that there was like individual just dudes, just guys that are your old head, and you go and you talk to your old head.
To bring it back to Trilla, what's really interesting about his like rap style, which is like really underappreciated, is like, yes, it's like very simple, but like the way that he's like spelling out words and the way he's like trying different flow, like he goes between like doing like a really simple flow to doing like a Memphis style like triplet flow. Feels like he's like, I don't know, it's hard to describe, but it's like a child like playing on like a jungle gym and figuring out the different ways that they can play on it. You know, so does that make sense? Like he's figuring out the different ways that he can rap over this beat. Well, and like that's always been something that's really interesting about ASAP. And I still like to this day, like I know that ASAP has really fallen off, and his like last album was pretty trash. But like I really do believe in him. And I like for all of the rappers that I like sort of grew up with, I think that he really does have a potential for greatness.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, regarding that, like the how he'll just like move into different flows, I think that like he has the perfect balance of like I don't care rapping, and then like puncturing it with like, oh, I'm actually really good at rapping bars, you know. So like he gives it, and like he shows you like, oh no, I'm really like, I'm a good rapper, it's just like I choose to do it this way. And it's like the perfect balance to where I really do believe like he doesn't care about proving that he's good, but he does prove that he's good, but not enough to the point where it makes you think that he cares about proving that he's good. So you can respect him for like, you believe, you buy that he's choosing to sound like this.
And it was like a novel thing at the time. Like nobody had really done that before. And so like, I was talking to you about this where like big rappers at that time, like you couldn't be a big rapper unless you had some sort of legacy influence. Like if you're Kendrick, like the reason that you're big is because Dr. Dre signed you. If you're Danny Brown, the reason that you're big is because you have this big narrative album about turning 30 years old, and you know, and like his whole thing was like having like these crazy like techno beats, and like you had to have a story, you had to have like a reason that your album was important. For Joey Badass, it was that he was like a kid from New York rapping over DJ Premier or whatever, and like ASAP really like encapsulated that as like he was like, people were constantly comparing him to other people. And then he has those bars in the track is Leaf with Main Attractions. Is lit. Main Attractions are like the most lit cloud rap act of all time. Like I mean, Metro Zoo is probably better than them, but main attractions were incredible at their time and they're completely forgotten about. And he has bars in that song where he's like, I sound like Mac mixed with Wiz. I sound like Kanye mixed with Andre. And it's like, everybody is like the only, at that time, you could only be popular if people were comparing you to other artists. And so it's like, it's just really indicative of that time. And then like, he also has the track Brand New Guy with Schoolboy Q, where Schoolboy Q even has the verse where he says, Diddy and Nas put the ass in a blender, sprinkle some 50 and came out this N-word. You know what I'm saying? So it's just like throughout that whole era, it was like you had to be compared to people. And that's like how you were going to make it. And like, even in ASAP Rocky's verse on Leaf, he says, get off my dick, stop saying that. Like, he was the main first person that was like, stop comparing me to other rappers. Like, I'm my own person. Hmm. Like, yeah. And I guess Tyler, the Creator, sort of did that too. But I think that's a really important part of hip hop history that people forget about, because it was like trap wasn't big yet and like the whole idea of party music was just like, you know, it was like you had your mainstay party music dudes like Juicy J and Wiz Khalifa, but like you hadn't really, like, it hadn't transcended into where that was the main part of rap yet.
So it was like an identity crisis period.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, no, I really enjoyed this one.
It was. And then, like, as social media, like, became such a big part of, like, hip-hop, then, like, after that, the big rappers were, like, it was about, like, where you were from or what you were doing on IG Live, and that's how you see, like, not only, like, 6ix9ine, but, like, people that are big now, like, Pooh Shiesty or, like, it's all about like which neighborhood you come from now, whereas like, and how street you are. Whereas back then it was like ASAP Rocky wasn't necessarily street, but like, So it's a really interesting thing.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. And out of everything oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, and also like the huge collaboration with Space Ghost Perp on there, like Space Ghost Perp predicted like an entire decade of music, you know.
Out of everything we listened to, obviously this was my favorite of the bunch.
It's incredible.
It's really good. Out on Spotify now, give it a listen.
All right,
that'll wrap it up.
This was a great episode. We're really getting back to our roots.
Yes, we're back.
Exploring. You know, we're the best. We're the most important show.
Yes,
like,
indeed.
In like the last, like, I mean, if you want to look at like analytics, like maybe like Chapo Trap House or something,
maybe
is like the most important show. But like, we're the underground. We're the underdog. You know, we're the 20 years from now, this will be important, you know?
Indeed. Yes. Yes. Time will vindicate us. History will vindicate us. All in due time.
All right. Sayonara.
All right. And sayonara to you.
All right. Peace.
Peace.